From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. The House Science, Space, and Technology Committee held a hearing this week on a proposed EPA rule. Yes, something other than the impeachment hearings did happen in D.C. this week. This hearing was about a proposed EPA rule that officials say will make the science behind regulations more transparent. But many scientists argue it will cut important science out of the rulemaking process. This hearing came days after a leaked version of a supplement to that proposal drew criticism that it was even worse than the initial proposal from last spring. Here to walk us through all of this is Jenna Reed. She's a lead science and policy analyst in the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union for Concerned Scientists. Jenna, good to talk with you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Before we start, we should say that we invited the EPA to join this conversation and they declined, so we will not be hearing directly from them today. But Jenna, can you just take us back to April 2018, the first version of this proposal? What's the general gist of this new regulation about what science can be used for rulemaking?
Right. So this proposal, it's called the Strengthening Transparency and Regulatory Science Rule at the EPA. And under the guise of transparency, this proposal would actually require that all studies used by the EPA make available their underlying raw data, original codes and models, everything that they use to produce a study to the public. And what this would do really in practice is restrict the type of science, mostly public health studies like epidemiological data, for example, from being considered for regulatory actions at the agency. So what it does is it takes a public health agency and restricts the amount of public health science that that agency can actually use. And while it's in the name of transparency, that's not what this proposal is really about. And why we know this is that this was a tactic that the creator and the designer of this tactic was actually the tobacco industry, going way back to the 1990s. In a memo that a tobacco industry lobbyist wrote to a tobacco company saying that, you know, this is an opportunity to add procedural hurdles to the agency. If we require these unattainable levels of transparency at the agency, then we can actually, although we can't win on the science on these issues, we could actually just break the process. So we've seen this type of transparency proposal proposed in legislation in the 2010s on the House Science Committee that largely, was a failure. And then once EPA became sort of infiltrated by many industry representatives and former staffers of those same people who introduced legislation in Congress, this proposal made its way into EPA rulemaking, which is problematic because this could then be codified and become implemented at the agency, and it's a lot harder to roll it back.
Well, Jenna Reed, let's walk through some of your, and we should say many scientists' objections to this transparency rule. While most would say, yes, transparency in science is a good goal, why would this rule make the standard, as to use your word, unattainable for many public health studies?
Right. So a lot of the environmental health data that EPA relies on is born out of epidemiological studies. And those, epidemiology explores why individuals are developing diseases or other health outcomes by looking at exposures. And part of that is, people are enrolled in these cohort studies of small groups of people, and their health data becomes, really a part of the metrics used within those studies. And that health data is protected by the researchers as a requirement under HIPAA privacy protections, because they're intimate records about a person's life. And if that information became public, it could actually do real economic harm to those individuals, impacting, the way that they receive health care or the way that employers are making decisions about how to give them coverage. So it's really important, and then there are legal protections in place because that information should be kept private.
Is there not a way to do these same studies using something like anonymized data where that personal information that would identify a person is removed and scientists still get access to, you know, behavior or exposures and medical outcomes, the data they actually need for the study and potentially could make public without having that personal data attached to it?
Right. So there are, you know, a lot of the data sets for underlying these studies that are then provided to, for example, the peer reviewers who are looking at these studies as they're coming through. You know, they will have access to a different level of the data that's already been analyzed and anonymized, so that the data is protected. But the raw data, which is what EPA is asking for, it does not have those same protections in place. And there have been several studies that have been done to show that even just, you know, even with a lot of protections put in place, even just a few details about a person that you would think are you know, unrelated and pretty unidentifiable can actually be used to identify a person, you know, just a zip code and a couple of other details about a person.
In addition to transparency, another issue that has been raised in the context of this rule is whether or not studies can be replicated. And obviously, that is an important part of science, to be able to replicate another study's findings. But again, this is a largely unattainable bar for a lot of these public health studies, right? I mean, you can't go back and get the same people that started in a study 10 years ago and do another study with them. So how does that factor in?
Right. You know, I think this is a point that was brought up in the hearing yesterday as well. And, you know, I think reproducibility and replicability in science is very important, but it's not the be all end all of a study. And, you know, science isn't about one individual study. It's about the weight of the evidence. And reproducibility is not necessary or really sufficient for determining the validity of a particular study. And EPA recognizes this in the current way that it weighs the evidence, and validates studies based on a whole range of factors that feed into a study's credibility. And EPA needs that flexibility to be able to allow for some non-reproducible studies to inform policy or non-replicable studies. You know, for example, there are environmental health disasters that are then studied, and those types of conditions should not ethically be recreated. We shouldn't be exposing people to, environmental contaminants. We shouldn't be recreating the BP oil spill in order to for the agency to validate the findings of a particular study. Instead, we should look to the weight of the evidence, how those studies feed into a bigger picture about the findings and the conclusions of those particular studies. There's absolutely no reason that we should be just restricting the ability for the agency to look at a subset of studies and really narrowing that idea of best available science for really important work that we need to be doing to protect people from environmental dangers.
Jenna Reed, you mentioned the hearing that happened in the House this past Wednesday. What, if anything, did we learn from that hearing about this proposed rule?
I think there were a few things that I think were confirmed, including the fact that the EPA's own scientific staff and career staff were not really involved in the formation and the design of this rule. And we've known this because documents we received as a part of the Freedom of Information Act showed that this was truly a politically derived proposal and that the scientists at the agencies were not looped into its design really at all. Not only that, but the agency's advisors were not involved. They weren't notified about the proposal until it came out. This is the Science Advisory Board at EPA that is supposed to hear from the agency when there are rules coming down the pike that will have some kind of scientific and technical relevance. And actually, those advisors, when they found out that this rule had been proposed back in April 2018, wrote a memo that said, you know, we really need to review this rule because it has broad implications for not just EPA science, but the scientific community at large and how academic scientists are able to do their work and do policy-relevant work. So that was one thing that came out of the hearing from the EPA witness. The other panel was made up of several different scientists from different fields, including people who've worked on in the transparency world and how to best make science more open to the public. And every single witness on that panel agreed that the rule as written should not move forward. There was a lot of concern that as written, this rule would effectively restrict the science that EPA can use, which is not a good way for the agency to function.
This proposal is a year and a half old. It's gotten significant pushback from the scientific community. Where does the process go from here? What are the steps or the obstacles to this becoming an actual rule at the EPA?
Right. So currently, the rule just went to the Office of Management and Budget, which is under the White House, review. It's sort of the interagency review process. And last time, it only spent, just under a week in that review process, which was rushed in order to get a release of the rule done in under Pruitt's term. So we're not sure exactly how long OMB review will take. There's an opportunity there for stakeholders and interested parties to meet with the White House to talk about the implications of the rule. And there's also, once this rule becomes actually proposed, there will be a comment period, although it appears based on the leaked version that it will be an inadequate amount of time, 30 days, for a rule, as I mentioned, that has huge implications at the agency and the scientific community at large. So there will be another opportunity for public comment. And, if it moves into that stage of the process, it will likely be challenged for its legal standing. And so look out for that as well. But there will be more opportunities to comment on the inadequacy and the harm that this rule could do.
That's Jenna Reed. She is a lead science and policy analyst in the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union for Concerned Scientists. Jenna, thank you.
Thank you.
And again, we did reach out to the EPA and they declined to make anyone available for an interview. Up next, men and women not only disagree about where to set the thermostat, they see decision-making conversations very differently. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.